Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, pilgrims return to the town of Christ's birth. Pax Christi calls for action to support those still suffering in the Holy Land. Catholic bishops welcome a UN vote calling for a moratorium on capital punishment. But first, Pope Benedict greets pilgrims and visitors gathered for his last general audience of 2007. Benedict on Wednesday held his last general audience of the year in the Paul VI Hall, reflecting on the season of Advent as a time of joyful hope. My colleague Lydia O'Kane takes a closer look at what the Pope had to say.
It was Pope Benedict's last audience before Christmas, and the birth of our Lord was the main theme of his address to the many thousands of faithful gathered in the Paul VI Hall. The Pope began by focusing on Advent, saying it was a time of expectation and hope.
Dear brothers and sisters, in this Advent season, the Church invites us to reflect on Christ's birth and to prepare ourselves in watchfulness and prayer for His second coming. Advent is thus a time of joyful expectation that our hope, and indeed the hopes of all humanity, will find fulfillment in the peace and salvation which only God can give. Waiting in joyful hope for the Lord's coming also means preparing His way and welcoming Him as the incarnate Son of God, the truth which gives meaning to every human life.
The Holy Father went on to say that the child Jesus born in a stable and lying in a manger is the way to true fulfillment and is our salvation.
How important it is then to proclaim this mystery in all its saving power. The Son of Mary born in Bethlehem is the light which illumines our life, the ways it leads to human fulfillment. The good news of our salvation in Christ must be made known to a world which longs for this message of reconciliation, solidarity, and hope. May this Christmas be for everyone a celebration of peace and joy. Joy at the birth of the Prince of Peace. Together with Mary and Joseph, let us contemplate the newborn child lying in the manger.
During his audience, the Holy Father invoked a special blessing on all the children present, saying, "Dear ones, with great affection, I wish a happy Christmas to you and your families."
Carissimi, con tanto affetto, auguro un buon Natale a voi e ai vostri familiari.
In conclusion, Pope Benedict greeted the many pilgrims, students and tourists in a number of languages, including English.
I am pleased to greet the English-speaking pilgrims and students present at this audience, especially those from the United States of America. Upon you and your loved ones, I invoke the Lord's blessings of health and joy during His holy season. Through the prayers of the Virgin Mother, may we grow in the knowledge and love of Christ the Savior. A happy Christmas to you and your families.
And my thanks to Lydia O'Kane for that report on Pope Benedict's general audience. Bethlehem, the town of Christ's birth, is expecting to draw more pilgrims this Christmas season than at any time since violence flared with the start of the Second Intifada some 7 years ago. The mayor of Bethlehem says around 65,000 pilgrims are expected to visit the town this year. That's four times the number of tourists who came to Bethlehem in the 2005 Christmas period. The drop in violence between Palestinians and Israelis Israelis, and this latest boom in tourism has helped to ease the economic suffering of people in the town, struggling to cope with the effects of the separation wall and the numerous checkpoints that hamper travel and trade between Israel and the Palestinian territories.
There are hundreds of families that are living in very difficult situations and conditions because of that situation of the wall and the status of Jerusalem, and all that affects their life, of course.
Father Pier Battista Pizzaballa is head of the Franciscan Custody of the Holy Land. He was in Rome this week to discuss the severe economic and political tensions that are continuing to fuel an exodus of Christians from the Holy Land. Speaking at a press conference here in the Vatican, he said the number of Catholics in the Holy Land continues to decline. Latest figures show about 120,000 Christians left in Israel and the Palestinian territories, about half of them Catholic and the vast majority Palestinians. 40 years ago, he said, Christians formed the large majority of Bethlehem's population. Today, they form less than 10%. Several Christian leaders have expressed fears that in a few years' time there may be no lay Christian community left in the Holy Land. My colleague Susie Hodges asked Father Pizzaballa whether he too shares those fears.
Is a fear that is widely shared, but I think is too pessimistic. I am sure that the Christians, the lay Christians, will remain in Holy Land, even in the Palestinian Authority. Maybe less Christians, less influent in the society, but the Christians will remain, I'm sure, in Holy Land.
But how badly has the wall impacted on life? And is this also a factor that has perhaps helped to speed up the rate of immigration?
Of course, not just the wall, the economical situation, the wall, the conflict, the economical perspective, the political situation, all these elements together create a feel of frustration, lack of perspective for the future. All these things strongly help the immigration of Christians from Holy Land.
You talked about the fact there's also this internal immigration, particularly towards Jerusalem, and you mentioned that there are people that are like 20 people living in one room because they prefer to live in those conditions in Jerusalem rather than outside. Are there many people living in such conditions?
For me, also, if there are only 20 persons, are more than enough. But there are hundreds of families that are living in very difficult situations and conditions because of that situation of the wall and the status of Jerusalem, and all that affects their life, of course.
Bethlehem and Jerusalem are only a few kilometres apart, but now with the wall and the checkpoint, how long does it take often for somebody to travel from one city to the other?
You are never sure. Sometimes in 10 minutes you can be in Jerusalem, sometimes it needs 3 hours. It depends from how many people are before you, depends on the political tensions. Many different elements can change dramatically in a few hours the condition to pass the checkpoint.
You also said that this year you're expecting a significant increase in the number of pilgrims coming to Bethlehem to celebrate Christmas. Now, given that in some ways on the ground the situation has got worse because of the wall has continued to be built, there's more checkpoints, why has there been this increase?
You should put in consideration that for 5 years we didn't have at all pilgrims. And the pilgrims, the companies, the parish churches didn't cancel the pilgrimage. They postponed the pilgrimage. So at that certain point they decide, oh, okay, nevertheless the situation will go there. So this is what we think happened in 2007. On the other side, it is also true that the political situation is difficult, but the people never seen in this last year physical problem of violence in the Middle East, maybe Middle East, yes, but not in Holy Land, so they are encouraged to come.
You talked also about the problems, or shall we say, the slow progress in the talks between the Holy See and the State of Israel. do sometimes people feel there that the talks, they are talking for the sake of talking, but no real progress has been made?
No, they are not talking for the sake of talking, because also recently we had the churches, head of churches in Jerusalem, we met to discuss very specific points. So they are working, but there are still many points to be clarified between the two parts. Because of that, we need more time to reach an agreement. The situation is not easy, actually, because there are still we still have to work about mutual confidence, and there's a lot of work to do on that. But I'm sure that we don't need other 13 years in order to arrive at an agreement.
But has there of late been some progress, albeit small?
Yes, there's small progress. Very small, but there are progress. At least we are talking now about concrete and very specific aspects of the Christian life, Catholic life in Holy Land. The taxation, the kind of taxation, the juridical position of the churches, the holy places, they are very specific and important points that we are discussing. We don't agree about all the aspects. There are some aspects that already are agreed, but others not yet. So, because of that, we need a little more time.
My thanks there to Father Pier Battista Pizzaballa, head of the Franciscan Custody of the Holy Land. He was talking there to my colleague Susie Hodges. The plight of people in the Holy Land is also at the heart of an Advent initiative by the global network of Catholic peace groups, Pax Christi International. Together with other peace groups working in the Holy Land, Pax Christi is asking individuals and organisations to send Christmas wishes and prayers to the people of Bethlehem, calling for justice, peace and security for all in the region. Emailing such greetings and prayers, the organisation says, is an important gesture of comfort and hope for those suffering the effects of violence and extreme economic hardship. Claudette Wehrli from Haiti is president of Pax Christi International. She told Lydia O'Kane about the importance of this initiative and about other projects her organisation has been working on throughout the past year.
Actually, we are calling on not only our people, let's say our members, but also to all people of good faith to send messages. For us, it is a very special place because of the birth of Christ, but also because there is so much suffering in that region. So for us, it is a symbol also of all the other places where people are suffering because of violence. And our message is a message of hope, of understanding, of compassion and solidarity. And we really hope, you know, that the Prince of Peace will help us build peace, not only in the Middle East, but all over the world where there are problems, violence.
Looking at Pax Christi, how much has Pax Christi been able to help around the world in these fields, and how happy are you with the work that has been done by the organization?
Pax Christi is working all over the world through our member organization, and they are involved in different kinds of work. You know, I am myself from Haiti, a country in trouble. But there, for example, people are doing a lot on human rights, you know, looking at the violation of human rights, educating people for peace to try to solve their problems, you know, in a peaceful way by, through dialogue. In other places, like in Asia, the focus is mostly on education for peace. So it's different. In some places, then we make the accents on empowerment of women, and we talk about all the violence done to women, not only when rape, for example, is used as a weapon of war, but even within the families, whenever there are beatings, not only toward women, of course, but also children. So there are a lot of cases where our work reach people, let's say, or we work hand in hand with organizations working for human rights. But we do also a lot of advocacy because PASCISI is a member organization that has consultative status at the UN. So there we work both, let's say, at the United Nations in New York, but also in Vienna and also in Geneva. So we work to try to see if there could be not only regulation, but if there could be less use of arms, small arms, but also nuclear threat and so on. You know, so that means that in that field also we are very present. And since we are talking about Christmas, this is a time to recall and to plead to the parents, you know, not to give games of violence to children. Because now children are learning very, very soon, sometimes even before 1 or 2 years, you know, they see it on TV, they are given gifts, you know, toys. So they learn violence that way. And I think that those are little things that all of us can do something about it to stop violence or diminish at least violence in our world.
Do you find that you receive quite a lot of support? You were talking about messages of peace messages. Do you find around Christmas that people are very willing to give support to the organisation?
I think that, yes, we have received a lot of support and we will probably still receive a lot. But, of course, we do that call and other organizations do it, but I think that the most powerful messages are coming actually for people to buy, actually. So that means that there we cannot compete. We are not strong enough. I don't think so, you know. But at the same time, I think that this is a season of the year where people are inclined to at least try to do something good, you know. So that means that then we try to not only to reinforce it, to try to see among us and around us the suffering people, you know, people in the streets. Some of them are begging, but in Europe and a lot of northern countries, this is a time where it is very cold. So that means that seeing people outside, having to sleep outside in the street, then that call on us, you know. So there also we try to reach out with organizations that are usually providing relief and assistance to the poor.
As we come out of 2007 and go forward into 2008, another year ahead for Pax Christi, is there anything in particular? I know you'll be, I'm certainly be continuing the work that you're presently doing, but is there anything in particular that you, for Pax Christi, you'll be focusing on next year, or will it be just a case of continuing the projects that you have?
We are continuing the project, but I hope that we will strengthen them, you know, because, for example, our name is very appealing, Pax Christi, the Peace of Christ, you know, so several organizations have joined us, and we have in our network some organizations that are very strong, that have a long history, that have been here, let's say, for 60 years or more, but we have also some little groups that have joined us in countries mostly from the south, so we have young people are determined to do things because they have known violence themselves and or they have suffered from violence and they want to do things. But there is a learning process that has to be done. So here the focus will be to strengthen our movement and try to see how, let's say, the older, even if I put it into quote, the older generation of people can reach out and help more, you know, the youngest one, you know. So it is much about networking, but mostly about strengthening not only the movement, you know, but each individual organization.
Claudette Whaley there, president of Pax Christi International. And for details of all their activities, including the Bethlehem emailing initiative, you can see their website www.paxchristi.net. United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday passed a resolution calling for a worldwide moratorium on the use of the death penalty. The non-binding resolution stopped short of an outright demand for an immediate abolition of executions, but it is being seen as carrying important moral authority in the struggle to outlaw capital punishment. Two similar attempts in the 1990s failed to gain a majority vote in the General Assembly, which passed this latest resolution with 104 countries in favour and 54 against. A statement from UN Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon welcomed the vote, calling it a bold step forward by the international community.
The fact that the issue is on the agenda in the way that it is has a great deal to do with what the Episcopal Conference in the United States has said about the value of life.
Bishop Frank DeWayne heads the Diocese of Venice in Florida, and before taking up that appointment last year, he served here in Rome as Undersecretary of the Vatican's Justice and Peace Council. I asked Bishop DeWayne for his reaction to the news of this UN resolution.
Well, I think it's certainly for all of humanity a step forward, recognizing that really we must respect life from the moment of conception till natural death. And I think at the same time, you have this conflict, some of them arguing, well, it's an invasion of sovereignty of countries. Sovereignty can't be the reason when we're protecting life. So while I might understand that intellectual argument, certainly from a human rights perspective or respect life perspective, it doesn't really take into consideration the value of life.
This is, however, a non-binding resolution, isn't it? Simply suggesting that countries should follow this path towards a moratorium. What kind of value, what kind of effect do you think it can have in helping to stop the use of capital punishment?
Yes, unfortunately, it stopped short of an outright demand for the abolition of the death penalty. However, I think this puts a number of countries on alert, and in the case of the United States, states, because that's where the authority lies. And it indicates to them, listen, we have to do, this isn't working. The majority of the world looks at this quite differently, that we must respect life more profoundly. So I think it's a very positive indication, even though it is non-binding, it signals there is a trend here, there is a movement of this direction. In the early 90s, I served with the Vatican delegation to the United Nations in New York. And at that time, you couldn't get a resolution like this onto the floor. Now, not only does it, whether it was binding or non-binding, now not only does it get onto the floor, but the resolution is approved. So I think we're moving forward on this issue.
What do you think are the most important factors that are helping to turn this tide of both public opinion and also at international level like this?
Well, I think it's been shown over and over again that the death penalty in itself does not deter crime or criminals proceeding in an unjust way. I do also think that the world looks at this in a number of situations where it has occurred and been videotaped and filmed. I think the reaction of the world, the average human being, is repulsed by that, that someone can be killed in such an inhumane fashion or their life just stamped out like that. So I think the real message to everyone is this isn't working, it is barbaric and inhumane, and we as human beings don't want to be any part of that.
Now, you mentioned, of course, the United States still being one of the countries which does continue to use the death penalty, and yet this UN vote comes just a few days after New Jersey becoming the first state to abolish, to remove capital punishment from the statutes. It's an important step forward, isn't it, in the US context as well?
I believe it is. And also, I think if we look to some of the other states where the death penalty is still, allowed, there you also find strong opposition repeatedly coming up. And it's something that candidates running for office have to address now. In the past, wasn't even brought up. Now it is on the agenda. And people are saying, you know, we want to know what your position is. And you know, we think there should be maximum respect for human life and for human beings. And so I think it is a momentous time on this issue. both not only for the world, the UN stage, but also for the United States.
The Catholic bishops over there in America have been very active on this issue, haven't they? Campaigning quite strongly to try and get the Catholic position on this issue across.
Yes, I think I really believe they've been effective also in getting the message out. As I noted earlier, there was a seminar held here in my diocese in Florida, but it wasn't just my diocese. It was held through in each diocese in the state of Florida, organized by the Florida Catholic Conference, to have someone come in and speak against the death penalty and to really speak about the realities of the death penalty in Florida in light of Catholic teachings. And I think it resonates with Catholics, non-Catholics, and people of goodwill, the fact that we demonstrate maximum, should I say, respect for the life of every human being, regardless of the difficulty they may have gotten themselves into.
How much influence do you think the Church has had on this particular campaign to try and stop the use of capital punishment, particularly there in the United States?
I think it has had a major influence. Now, you might say, well, it isn't stopped yet. Okay, and I'd have to grant you that. However, the fact that the issue is on the agenda in the way that it is has a great deal to do with what the Episcopal Conference in the United States has said about the value of life and respect for life throughout the life cycle, as I noted earlier, from conception to natural death. We do not have the right to kill someone.
I see there were like four executions in Florida last year. What about the situation there in your own area?
Politically, the situation in Florida has been difficult, where the issue itself has not been voted upon at large, but the legislature continues to support the death penalty. There are just many things that it's very traditional in some of its viewpoints. And from a historical sense, the death penalty has been present. So I think it will continue to take teaching on the part of all like-minded parties who are opposed to the death penalty so that maximum indication for respect from life can be given and hopefully will be taken on by the legislators and the voters, and something can then be done in a very, more official way to put an end to this grievous ill.
My thanks there to Bishop Frank DeWayne, head of the Diocese of Venice in Florida and former Undersecretary of the Vatican's Justice and Peace Council. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.